with guided meditation. I want to encourage you as you go into the formal practice of meditation to really take your time as a way of preparation to settle into the body. Sometimes we rush too quickly to be with our object of mindfulness, say breath. I want to encourage you to attend at first more fully to the body. So the invitation is to let the mind find the body. Mind is not always with the body. It feels like we have to remind ourselves. About the mind being with the body. So, finding a posture that is going to support you to be upright. It can be helpful if you slightly move the lower back towards the belly so that you are supported by your own spine. That movement allows for the opening of the chest area. Allowing the breath energy to flow with ease. Neck is long, and then the chin slightly tucked towards the chest to open up the back of the neck to allow for this easy flow of breath energy. Allowing the lower body to root into earth by releasing the weight of the body onto the chair. Sense all places where the body is making contact. The sitting bones on the chair. The feet on the earth, the earth beneath this body. Noticing the feel of the clothing on your skin. Relaxing, softening all muscles that we are not using in the present moment. For example, the muscles of the face, allow them to soften. Release the jaw. That can be a pleasurable sensation when tension is released from the jaw area. Let me see if you can contact that pleasurable sensation that will run down your neck, your shoulders, as you continue to just let the jaw to hang. Dropping the shoulders away from the ears. Any movement that allows for release of tension in the body will be of support in the cultivation of mindfulness. And softening the belly. Your hands sit comfortably on your lap. If your eyes are open, I'd advise a soft lowered gaze. Or you can close your eyes. What's the sense of how the body is in this present moment? So, throughout our meditation practice, continue to invite a sense of ease in the body. Then it's just a slight movement of the upper body. That can enable ease. By now, perhaps you're aware of the impact of breathing in the body. So just resting the attention with the experience of an in-breath and an experience of an out-breath. And now I'd like you to widen your attention. You're widening your attention beyond the body, attending to the space around the body, the space in the room you are in. And then listening for any sounds that can be heard easily in whatever direction. And now I'm hurriedly returning the attention to the body, to the experience of breathing in the body. Noticing where the breath for you is most clear in the body. This could be at the nostrils, could be in your throat or chest or belly. And then rest your attention where the breath is most clearly experienced. It can be helpful to sustain the attention with the experience of breathing when we use noting. So this is a soft noting of each breath. It could be something like, in and out. It can also be something like breathing in. I know I am breathing in. Breathing out. I know I'm breathing out. The knowing is what's important. Knowing an in-breath as an in-breath. Out-breath as an out-breath. Letting the bath to happen naturally. We're not controlling the breath. We just let it come and go as it will. So you're just present. Present to feel breath as it happens, happening in the body. You will notice from time to time that the attention wanders, gets lost in thought. This is not a problem. It's natural for the mind to think. So, no judgments here. As soon as you're noticing that, oh, my attention is lost in thought, that's a moment of mindfulness. Notice the thought and unhurriedly return the attention to the experience of breathing happening in the body. And if you're feeling a bit agitated or unsettled, it can be helpful to intentionally take a longer in-breath. A slower, extended out-breath. And then let the breath return to its natural breathing. Just resting with the experience of an in-breath and an experience of an out-breath. Softening. What can be softened? Noticing places in the body where there's tension, there's holding, inviting ease by releasing the tension. Softening the attitude of mind. By meeting with whatever is arising in the present moment in body and mind with an attitude of kindness. Practicing like this for the rest of our sitting practice, returning the attention to the experience of breathing, and just resting. with each breath. Thank you for your practice. So, the topic of our reflection It goes, it's okay not to be okay. So, two things that inspired this topic. One is that a Sri Lankan teacher by the name of Godwin Samraratne used to come to teach in South Africa a lot. He's long passed. I never met him. I know of him through his students. When they speak about him, he comes into being. Such a beloved teacher who was experienced as an embodiment of kindness. So, in his teachings, he emphasized the teaching and practice of loving kindness. And one of the practices of loving kindness he taught, he called it, it's okay meditation. So this is how it goes. I feel lonely. Okay. I feel scared. Okay. I feel tired. Okay. Very simple. But hard to remember to do. So the interesting thing that this teaching of Godwin is alive in me is that a month ago, a peer and a friend was inviting me to Sri Lanka to teach in December. And of course, in that conversation, I asked Riet about Godwin. Gordon yet shared with me that for many, retreats, she's German, based in Germany, she would go to Nelambe in Sri Lanka, which is the name of the center, retreat center that Godwin established, to practice with a teacher who was a student of Godwin. So in asking her about Godwin, her response was, he was an Arahant. Arahants are people who have reached stage four of enlightenment. I thought, wow, this is interesting. There's something about this person that I could always connect to when his South African students speak about him. So here, Godwin, with this teaching, it's okay not to be okay. It's an encouragement for us not to be scared of suffering, of pain. There's pain in life. This is where the Buddha starts in his teaching of the first, I mean, Four Noble Truths, there is suffering. So for myself, when I practice like that, what I notice is the softening of attitude towards my own suffering. And that softening of attitude allows for inner space. If we're going to progress in our practice and understand suffering as the task from that first noble truth, this can give us capacity, the sense of spaciousness to look at suffering, to embrace suffering. So, a teacher at IMS, Rebecca Brenshaw, published a book this year. One of the stories she shares in that book is about her early days of practice, practicing with Joseph Goldstein. And she says in this one retreat, she's in a one-on-one interview with Joseph. And he says in the interview, "I'm lonely, I'm terrified, I'm in despair, I'm sad." In one mouthful, right? "I'm lonely, I'm terrified, I'm in despair, I'm sad." Joseph says, "So, what's the problem?" Then she goes on with the story in her book and says, "I was stunned." "You mean there's no problem to feel these feelings?" And then she says, in that moment, she realizes that she had this unconscious view that it's not okay to feel certain feelings. I can relate to that. I don't know about you. My own conditioning is very much about not to feel difficult feelings. Be strong, be happy, be cheerful, show up, achieve, be kind. It's like, wow, not allowed to acknowledge and feel these feelings that are at the heart of human experience. As human beings, we feel. So, because of this kind of socialization most of us have received, we make a problem out of suffering, stress, dissatisfaction, fear, anger, despair. We may even demonize those experiences. So, in this reflection with you, the invitation is to try out this practice that can enable the courage, the strength to recognize and embrace difficult emotions. Be with this constant as human beings experience of discontent. unsatisfactoriness. There are many ways we can talk about suffering. It comes in many flavors. And you may say, okay, Nolita, just now, there's no suffering. I feel okay. Well, have you noticed that it changes? That experience of being okay, it doesn't last. It changes. Sundara, who is one of the first five nuns to practice with Ajahn Sumedho at Amrawati, is asked about how do you work with discontent? Her response is, I become content with discontent. In this practice, this capacity to be with suffering, with to be with distress, by meeting it with kindness, by befriending it, is a foundation. It's a foundation that will lead to the wisdom of letting go. Because when the Buddha is talking about freedom from suffering, he's talking about the freedom of letting go, which is the freedom to let be. So there's a story about Dalai Lama who is asked about what is the most important thing in life. Being Dalai Lama, he's very considerate and says, well, it depends who you are. If you are a serious Dharma practitioner, the most important thing in life is to learn how to work with afflictive emotions. This is the work of practice. If we recognize and can be with a difficult emotion, that's practice. Of course, not easy. It's so interesting what I note over and over again in the role of supporting others to deepen their practice, either as individuals or as group. The most asked question is, how do I get rid of suffering? It's not put that way. No, but this is what I'm hearing. How do I use mindfulness to get rid of pain? This is a wrong view. It's a misunderstanding of these teachings. When the Buddha says, I teach one thing, suffering, and the end of suffering, and then we think we can use then mindfulness to get rid of suffering, it means we haven't yet fully understood, allowed in this teaching of the Four Noble Truths. Embrace suffering. That is the invitation. That's where we start. So most recently, I had a student who's saying, Nolita, I notice when I am engaged in my adult son, much as I enjoy having meaningful conversations with him, I can lose my calm and feel intense and tense. So what do I do? My response to her was, this practice is not about being calm. That can happen, right? But it's not about that. It's about gaining insight that releases us. From the suffering of clinging. This practice is about freeing the heart from delusion, from ignorance, which is what is behind this constant movement in the mind of wanting and not wanting, wanting and not wanting. This is what the Buddha is concerned about when he's talking about the ending of suffering. It's the ending of delusion. And the mind, I don't know if you have noticed this, even if you have been practicing for long and you have heard these teachings of the Four Noble Truths over and over again, the mind is slippery around suffering. It can trick you easily. Many ways that the mind does this. Notice when there is some kind of suffering, whether it's pain or anger, fear. We are so quick to blame. Starting with blaming yourself for having these natural, normal human experiences. Well, we can also blame our parents or our children or the state of the world. And it's not as if things are not coming at us. We are living in times of multiple global crises. There's wars, genocide, dictatorships. Climate change. So the stakes are high. There was no challenge of climate change at the time of the Buddha. So what does this mean for you and me? It means the stakes are high. Where are we going to place our focus if we're talking about freedom from suffering? Where do we start? Well, you're here. Maybe we We start here. We start where there is support, where there are others who want this freedom as much as you do, spiritual friends. Here's our challenge. Even if you've been practicing for long, Ajahn Chah uses in relation to what I'm going to point you to a metaphor of an ant. He says we act like ants. What the ant does, it cycles around the mango and never get to taste the sweetness of the mango. So we can be dedicated practitioners and yet still trying to escape suffering. So this teaching by Godwin, it's accessible. It's a matter of remembering. It's okay not to be okay. How does that land as you let it in? Most recently, I think just about a week ago, I was in a retreat taught by one of my favorite teachers. Maybe some of you have said or you know about Ajahn Suchido's work. It's just a moment of suffering in the retreat. It's an afternoon, and the hindrance of sloth and torpor feels overwhelming. I remember at one point thinking, I want the bell to ring. I want this sitting to end. Of course, that doesn't happen. Bell is not ringing. And then at some point, by the time the bell rang, I realized that. Oh, that feeling changed. The reason I'm sharing this story, that wasn't the best part. The best part was realizing that, wow, it means that I don't have to have what I want to be okay. I wanted the bell to ring. I wanted the meditation to end. It didn't. I didn't get what I wanted. It changed. So, what we're being invited to in this practice is to be with our direct experience of the moment. What's arising in the moment, in the here and now? When we know what is arising in the now, or it's fear and we name it, it's anger, we name it. That is practice. This is practice that is then the foundation that will lead to the wisdom that releases the heart from greed, from hatred, from delusion. If we think about the teaching of the four foundations of mindfulness. In each of those foundations, the Buddha says, refer to an aspect of your experience, refer to breath. That's part of the first foundation. In the second foundation, refer to feeling tones, pleasant, unpleasant,
Pleasant.
neutral. Third foundation, he says, refer to mental states that are arising in the mind. This will include thoughts, emotions, moods. So when we just recognize and name what's arising in the mind, we are on the path that leads to the ending of suffering. So all I'm proposing is here, try out this simple teaching by Godwin. See for yourself, does it have a softening effect on the heart when I can acknowledge what is happening, that I'm not okay, and that is okay? The softening is a form of loving kindness. It's a form of benevolence, friendship towards our own experience of suffering. It's an invitation to open the heart, to be receptive to that which may be hard to bear. In this very moment, you could be going through in your life with what is hard to bear. For the mind to look at suffering, to have the strength to look at suffering, which is what the Buddha is inviting us to do. We need the strength of spaciousness, softening, inner softening. I'm going to share a sad story with the time I have left. A friend of mine died in November, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in May, and then she dies in November. And then only just 2 weeks ago, her adult son got murdered. So one of the memorial services, we had invited Kitisaro. Kitisaro is one of my main teachers. And Kitisaro in this memorial service talked about the truth of impermanence. His words stayed with me where he said, honor impermanence. A very brave message for an occasion where a speaker just before him was saying, this is unacceptable. Because this adult child was killed. And then Kitisaro follows that speaker and says, honor the truth of impermanence. Impermanence is one of the forms of suffering that the Buddha speaks to. You may be going through at this time through some form of painful change. I know for myself, aging is one. What follows aging is sickness. What follows sickness is death. How are we going to be able then to honor the suffering of change? Well, I'm proposing that the starting place is meeting what is difficult with kindness, befriend difficulty. I'm going to stop here and have us have a dialogue. Questions, comments in relation to what I'm offering, and anything related. Nancy, I hope you will assist here. I don't know whether people are going to use chat for questions or they will just speak out, which is completely fine.
They can raise their digital hand in Zoom, and that way we can spotlight them. You can see them while they answer their question. And to raise your digital hand in Zoom, you can click in the reactions button in the Zoom toolbar.
Great. Let's start with, is it Marianne?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is. I just want to make a comment because what just came strong across for me is this whole bit of it's okay, whatever. You know, you gave different examples of feeling, and what came across for me was, it's I easily can feel when I don't feel right that I am not doing something right. And to say, okay, let me off the hook. That is just part of my journey or part of being human, or I'm not different from anyone else. This is just how it is. So it's indeed also the sort of softening and learning to tolerate, but also because that is an aspect for me is I'm not necessarily doing something wrong, or maybe I do, but whatever, it's okay. That's how I heard it. That's what I wanted to share.
So this teaching is pointing to first recognizing when we're not okay. I'm not okay. And then noticing, how are you about not being okay? How is the mind with that? Is there aversion? Is there judgment? Are we pushing away? Are we trying to get rid of? Then if that's what we do, we're being reactive instead of being responsive. I know for myself, when I do that, there's no softening of heart. There's no inner space that gets created. I actually suffer more because now what is active is judgment. Judgment is a form of aversion. It's a form of ill will at self.
Recoiling.
Which is instinctual, by the way, Marianne, which is why then, if we're using a practice that creates inner space, when that there's that latch in the heart, something jumps, it's an instinct. If the space, we can see that and be able to contain that, right? Because in this practice, we're practicing if we see what is happening when it is happening.
It's so interesting because what drops in my mind is this poem from Rumi, that everyone comes into the inn and you need to welcome everything. So it's so interesting that it is in all sort of teachings, this universal truth, isn't it?
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Angela, this is the person I'm seeing on my screen. Thank you, Marianne, for your question.
I have a question that I think is topic adjacent. I can remember being angry just a couple months ago. I'm super new to this. My daughter lives with me and she just wakes up angry. She wakes up frustrated. And my response is always to leave and hold on to my energy. Is there a way that I can stay in the room so that I can share that example? Because obviously I shared my previous example and that's what brought her to that place. I'm not saying I'm responsible for her, but we live in the same home. How do I bring this? It's okay to not be okay and not leave the room so that she can see a softer side.
Interesting question, Angela. My thinking about this is we teach by example. What is it that you're experiencing when you decide to leave the room?
The intense energy that comes off of her, it's really strong, it's really heavy. And like my husband's told me before, like that's how he's felt. They feel the difference in me, and I leave because I'm uncomfortable. And you're saying sitting with the discomfort and being okay with it is one thing we need to do. So how do I sit with the discomfort without eventually responding in that same nasty? Because that's what I'm trying to avoid.
I hear you. I hear you. How do I sit with the discomfort? I guess the starting
And
place
not just
is to
retreat to my room.
acknowledge. Yes, maybe it's to acknowledge to yourself the suffering that's active in you in that moment. Be with the suffering that's active here. With what is coming at you. Because, of course, things are coming at us in life. And this form is a sensitive form, right? It's affected, it's impacted, and then it reacts. So, the practice of mindfulness is what can help us build capacity to recognize in that moment, I'm not okay, the suffering here. You're focusing on you. And then see what happens when you're taking care, you're befriending your own experience in relation to what's coming at you.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Like you said, you started off with how do I sit with discomfort? This whole practice is about that. It's building capacity to be with discomfort. If we're always running away from discomfort, how does that work? We've got to also see what are the results of what we choose to do. Thank you, Angela. Is it Meryl? Am I pronouncing it? Who's coming next? Help me, Nelsie, whoever. Oh, I have somebody now.
Yes,
Mer
Marley is on
Meryl.
mute.
Is it? Oh. You muted.
Can you hear me now? Yes. Was my source of audio. My question is related to anxiety. I understand that is a suffering, is not wanting to be here now, the anxiety. But there is a part of it that is already in the body. So I'd like to know if you can share words about it. How to be okay with the anxiety. Yeah.
You know what is great? You already know something about the anxiety being in the body. The question is, in that moment, do you know that directly? So the question is pointing you towards the investigation of what's happening in the body, being curious and interested to be and to know what's happening in the body. So there's one thing to recognize, oh, I feel anxious, but how do you know? That's then an invitation to explore the bare physical nature of anxiety, to be with that. Right? So you shine the light of mindfulness where there is discomfort. So when you feel anxious, what are sensations that are obvious to you? Bodily sensations.
My heart beating is fast, and my body weakenings somehow. I feel weakness in the body, and the breath is a bit shallow. Yeah.
I just noticed right now you took a deeper breath. Did you notice that? You just went.
Just yeah.
How does that feel when you're able in the moment to take, you feel anxiety and you take a deeper breath?
It feels good. But what I think I find difficult sometimes is the pace of life. Don't allow you to stop.
The pace of life.
Yeah, you cannot stop all the time. Do you know what I mean? That makes it a bit harder.
Can you breathe all the time?
Yes.
Then, if you can breathe, it's a matter of directing mindfulness to the breath, right? So it means you are conscious of your breathing. You are with your breath. Most of the time, we're not. And this is an invitation with the practice of mindfulness to be with what is happening when it's happening. And breath is always happening. So it's using in this situation breath as your object of mindfulness, right? Don't wait until you feel anxious. Let it be your moment-to-moment practice. Then that is what prepares you for when the anxiety takes over. It's what has been happening before. So, in a way, you are cultivating a cause that's going to have an effect. So, the cause here is the cultivation of mindfulness of breath, moment to moment.
Yes, absolutely makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. I notice you're looking calmer just now.
Thank
Right.
you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Nolita, there is a question in the chat box on how we can apply this into in relationships. Not being being okay with not being okay.
It's an interesting one because we're always in a relationship. We're in relationship with ourselves, with what is happening in relation to the relationship that is external. So the starting place is really to bring awareness to how am I relating to myself when something is not okay between me and the other. What's arising here? Because this is the starting place with practice. Practice doesn't say focus on somebody else. It says focus on what is happening with you moment to moment. This is how you then build capacity, build strength to then be with what you are experiencing in relationship to the other. Right? So the primary relationship with practice is really the relationship we have with ourselves, moment to moment. Is this a relationship of kindness, of compassion with myself, moment to moment? Or we just space out, or we carry the other person in our minds and we're fighting with them in our minds. Primary relationship for the ending of suffering is with ourselves, befriending this impact we're experiencing, maybe from a difficult moment in a relationship. If we attend to our own experience with kindness, that is what gives us capacity to be with the other when there is a difficulty. Okay, let's keep going then.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
You may have answered my question in the question before the last one. I'm not sure, and I'm not even sure how I can tick articulate this clearly, but I have experienced a lot of childhood trauma, and I am quite clear, I think that that really impacts on my ability to be self-compassionate, to bring kindness to myself. And I
I know my reactionary nature, and have a really hard time softening that, and being spacious. It's almost like softening and spacious feel to me like states that are very difficult for me. And I'm just wondering, can could you sh maybe shine a little light on this, that something, I know you've said quite a bit already, but if there's anything that might, be more relevant to when, trauma, and I think there's such a shutdown, in my emotional system, that anything that even looks like suffering, I want to run away, and cognitively I know, but I still have a strong, body reaction to this. And even though I do somatic therapy, and I've been doing it for a long time, it's still this part in the Dharma for me is really still difficult, and in life, I guess, too. Yeah. So any input would be really appreciated. Thank you. Yeah.
What do you notice in how you are with this history? Just to start with, where are you at in how you are with yourself?
I am very self-critical. I will always default to, I am not good enough. I am lesser. I can't do this. It's my fault. This attitude, I think, is a very strong presence. Yeah.
I just want to appreciate you for the courage to name
Thank you.
these difficult experiences. And if I'm really honest with you in this moment, what is coming up for me is compassion. And my wish for you is continue to practice, because it's through this practice that you will develop the capacity to being compassionate towards yourself. So I'm just going to say, continue to do what you are already doing in relation to practice, because it's going to take you to a place of befriending
Yeah.
this human experience of suffering.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I think even being here today, I can just feel in what some of the things people have been saying and what you've been saying, maybe just a little softening. So that feels really
Does
worthwhile.
that feel like that might be okay? Just a little bit of softening.
Just a little bit of softening. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
Thank you.
that makes me happy. That makes me happy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
Thanks.
you. Yes, Charles?
Yes, thank you. When I first tuned in, you mentioned about in the time of Buddha, we did not have the climate change problems we have today. But still, I do remember some stories of Buddha where he negotiated with tribes because they were suffering from not having enough water or not having enough land because they were growing and taking over their forests and all. And I have recently been quite sick from lack of oxygen, from COPD, from my karmas, and all the things that I've done to help people tear their houses down and dust and ends my smoking and all so many things that there are. And I was in coma and barely saved. And now I'm on oxygen. And during that time, I practically died, and I felt like I was in sort of some embargo world and suffered from some of these karmas and saw them quite clearly. For instance, as a blueberry farmer growing wild blueberries and like natives, indigenous people, we burn the blueberry fields to prune them so that they grow lots of blueberries the following year. And oh, I say, oh, look, what a wonderful burn. There will be so many blueberries for people next year. And even the deer and the insects and all, well, they will have blueberries too. But how many died in that fire? Oh.
Charles,
So.
a specific question in relation to what you have just shared.
Well, what I am saying is, or what I am trying to talk about is the is suffering. Is we are in a world of suffering. It's like whatever we do, no matter which way we move, we are. And my practice is to is for loving kindness, but I must also accept that everything I do creates a sort of a karma, and in my in this coma of suffering from these karmas, they burn off. They burned off some of them, and then I feel so good. I feel so clean. How is this?
You sound like you are in a good place.
I am in a good place. It was
You can't
horrible.
not be once we understand the truth of suffering.
Yeah.
There's something really fundamental and powerful about accepting that there is suffering in life. You sound like you get that.
Yes, oh, so hard, I get that. So clear, I get that.
Okay, Charles.